Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning, everyone. This is Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM and your host for this Tuesday for Speak Up, which is also only on CJSF 90.1 FM, Burnaby. Thank you all so much for tuning in this morning, whether you're on your way to work, already at work, or chilling at home. I'm very grateful that you are tuned in for this hour of talk content at CJSF. So to start off today, before I get into some of the pieces that I have planned, I thought I would start off with a bit of music. That is right. So coming up next and coming up first for this hour, we've got Vancouver artist Yawn. This is a song that came out recently by them. It is called Let It All Go off of their most recent album, Wish I Could Have. And I hope you all enjoy.
Of your pain to see me wounded like a bird. I was sinking in your silence. I was crying in small rooms. I was watching you avoid it all by moving on too soon. And I know I'm not the victim, but I let you feel it all. And just like a woman, I made myself small. I think I deserve to care.
I deserve to be absolved.
I set myself free. I lay upon the rocks and listen to the sea. I'm not gonna wallow, I don't need to dwell. I crush it all beneath my feet like little shells. And I don't think you've processed, and that's okay. I hope you find a good therapist someday. But it's not my problem, I no longer care. The tide is changing and the wind is in my hair.
We are back with Speak Up, only on CJSF. You were just listening to Let It All Go by Jan. And that was a nice little track, I thought, to start the morning. And coming up next, we've got a talk piece. And by talk piece, I just mean a news piece. And this comes all the way from Nanaimo, BC. One really cool thing about the National Community Campus Radio Conference in Nanaimo that happened this year, which I think has been talked about a lot on this hour, is just all of the really cool people that are working on interesting things that you meet. And one of those people was Laura McKenzie of CHLY, their LJI reporter. And she had mentioned a piece that she had done previously on Vancouver Island University's culinary arts and professional baking program at the university, creating a record-breaking 1,100-pound Nanaimo bar. I know, breaking news, important news. And apparently, less than 2 months later, that record has already been broken. And that's drama. And I live for that. So I thought I would play her follow-up piece that came out a few days ago, titled Nanaimo's World Record Title Dethroned, But Won't Stop People's Love for the Nanaimo Bar. That is right. So without further ado, Lauren McKenzie's piece on the Nanaimo Bar record that has recently been broken once again.
This is a CHY News Update. On May 17th, people near and far gathered at Vancouver Island University in Nanaimo to see the unveiling of a record-breaking Nanaimo bar. But within less than 2 months, Nanaimo has already been dethroned from this record. On May 17th, students in the Culinary Arts and Professional Baking and Pastry Arts program at VIU unveiled a record-breaking 1,100-pound Nanaimo bar. This event was used as a fundraiser for the culinary programs to purchase new ovens. But across the country, another group used this Canada Day to unveil an even bigger Nanaimo bar. Northwest Fudge Factory, located in Levac, Ontario, unveiled a 1,200-pound Nanaimo bar on July 1st, beating out Nanaimo's record by 100 pounds. Following the news that Nanaimo is no longer home to the world's largest Nanaimo bar, CHY visited shops and bakeries on the Nanaimo Bar Trail to see what locals thought about the city losing the record.
Okay, my name's Carling Van Hest, and I work at Misty Pines Bakery and Cafe, Old City Quarter. I mean, I'm kind of shocked. I feel like that didn't take very much time. I thought we were, like, we had in the bag for a while. So I'm, like, kind of shocked, I guess.
This is the Jabberwocky Coffee House. My name's Connor. I mean, it's surprising. Like, of course it'd be VIU to make the world's largest Nanaimo bar, but it was Ontario?
Ontario, yes.
Yeah, Ontario making the second, or this biggest one for the second time is, I don't know, it's Ontario. Like, I'm not going to be too pressed about it. We make good Nanaimo bars here. I feel like VIU is going to take it as a challenge, and they're going to make, like, a 1,400-pound one at some point. I don't think we're going to be too fussed about it. It's Ontario. Nanaimo is known for our great Nanaimo bars, but if someone can make it better or bigger, then albeit.
My name is Sherman Campbell, and I am one of the workers here at Tea on the Key. I think that it's kind of crazy to think, because Nanaimo is obviously known for, like, the world's famous Nanaimo bar, especially back, like, when it was created. To Ontario, I think it's a bit of a slap in the face because you never expected someone from a different province here someone from a different province to make the world's largest Nanaimo bar, but I guess someone just had the better resources to make the biggest one. So I guess it's a bit of a shock, honestly, but I'm not surprised. I mean, what, next year they're just going to make the next biggest Nanaimo bar, you know? So that's the one question that I think that leaves everybody, you know, who else is going to make the biggest Nanaimo bar?
Do you see it as a challenge then that now it seems like Nanaimo now has to take it back?
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, I think the next one is probably going to be as big as the gym over there because I know it was at the VIU. Yeah. So, yeah, I think it's just going to be as big as the gym probably next time.
My name's Jasper, and this is the Boca Cafe. Yeah, so I personally was a baker here first, but then I moved to a barista like 7 months ago. And then I was pretty proud that we did create the biggest one, and then we were competing against the Ontario one. So to hear that they've already made a big one is kind of interesting, because that's quite competitive to be that fast. And it would be interesting to see who would make the next biggest one, if it's Nanaimo Bar or not, or Nanaimo or not. Like, you know, if you're going to be in the Nanaimo, I would recommend getting a Nanaimo Bar here than going to, like, Ontario and grabbing a Nanaimo Bar. It's not the same feeling, you know?
Experience is coming to Nanaimo.
Exactly. So I think that's what makes it special. It's just the history, and it was designed here, so I think we should be the ones creating it, honestly.
The Nanaimo Bar Trail, run by Tourism Nanaimo, highlights local businesses in Nanaimo for locals and tourists who want to get their hands on the city's signature dessert. While Nanaimo no longer has the record of having the world's largest Nanaimo Bar, Nanaimo Mayor Leonard Krogh says it's no surprise someone would want to top their record.
Rumors were circulating and have been for some time that winning Nanaimo Bar, so to speak, the home of the biggest Nanaimo Bar in the world, would face challenges. So I'm not surprised entirely, but perhaps a little disappointed in the sense that I think it's only appropriate that the birthplace of the most beloved confectionery, the Nanaimo Bar, in fact, now faces a challenge from Ontario. I would have thought that they would respect the fact the West wants in, and this is just part of it.
He admits losing the record raises some interest in taking on the challenge of bringing back the record to the Harbor City.
It is certainly a challenge, but the logical group to take it on would be the VIU program once again. Having said that, I don't think they have much interest, time, or the energy, or the money, given the challenges the university faces to do that right now. But you know what? None of us are going anywhere for a while, so if maybe not next year, the year after that. But Nanaimo's not going to give up its title easily, nor should it.
And even if Nanaimo can't be home to the world's largest Nanaimo Bar, Mayor Krogh says there's so much more Nanaimo has to offer and for the community to celebrate.
Nanaimo is special for a whole series of reasons. It's not one thing in particular. You can start with the geographic location. You can start with history. You can start with the beauties of Tsay-Sit-Chin and our parks. You can start with the weather. You can start with the wonderful campus of Vancouver Island University, the international students that it attracts. You can start with a whole series of things. And all of that is found within one small, by world standards, city. Not readily found in many other cities, all in one grouping, and frankly located on the west coast of the most wonderful country in the world, Canada, a modern, liberal, stable democracy with public education and public health care. So what makes Nanaimo special? All of the above.
For CHY News, with files from Juniper Knight, this is Laura McKenzie.
This report was made with the support of the Local Journalism Initiative, the Community Radio Fund of Canada, and listeners like you. You can find more news updates, interviews, and stories from our nonprofit newsroom, as well as our news and current affairs podcast, Midcoast Morning, at chly.ca/news.
Thank you so much to Lauren from CHLY in Nanaimo for that news piece. You know, I foresee that is not going to be the last Nanaimo Bar related news to be played on Speak Up at a later date. But, you know, that's to be seen. Anyways, the next piece for this hour comes from myself, actually. This is a repeat of an interview that I did a few weeks ago. This interview was one that I was really proud of, partly because, so just to start, this interview was with the Tsleil-Waututh Nation, and more specifically Michelle George, who is the nation's cultural and technical specialist. And I had been wanting to interview her for a while because I wanted to speak on the nation's success with their kelp restoration project in Brighton Park and Cates Park and in those areas. And I've been trying to nail it down for a while, and I finally had gotten it. But by the time I was able to set up the interview, I was on my way to Nanaimo for the National Community Campus Radio Conference. And I ended up having to do this interview over Zoom on the ferry using my two bars of hotspot, and it worked. And I think that was quite the blessing. I was very stressed beforehand. This is a little background, by the way. So I hope you all enjoy this interview that I have ready to go for all of you right now. This is Danny Nesvedarani, community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. Since 2023, the Tsleil-Waututh Nation worked in partnership with the Kelp Rescue Initiative on bull kelp restoration in North Vancouver at Cates Park and New Brighton Park. Kelp forests in the Burrard Inlet have been facing rising ocean temperatures that have led to declines in kelp forests in the Salish Sea and around the world. According to the nation's Treaty, Lands, and Resources Department, even though there are groups focused on kelp restoration in British Columbia, there is no current standard bull kelp restoration method being applied across the region. The nation wanted to address this by developing strategies that can be successful in the Burrard Inlet to work against these declines and to motivate local industry to aid in bull kelp restoration efforts. To learn more about the impacts of this kelp restoration, we sat down for a conversation with Michelle George, Tsleil-Waututh Nation's cultural and technical specialist, where we were able to gain some insight on the effects this restoration project has had on the nation's underwater ecosystems since 2023. Please take a listen.
Tsleil-Waututh has been doing restoration projects for over the last 30 years, and it's a part of our initiative to clean up the waterways and surrounding lands. And so we've done restoration projects in estuaries and stuff, and we've been focusing on kelp and eelgrass. And specifically, this kelp project is sort of the first of its kind for us. So we're learning the process, how to harvest kelp from other areas, how to transplant it into new areas that aren't growing it. And it's sort of also a learning process for us. The methods for transplanting include securing kelp onto ceramic plates, to put it simply, and then putting those on the seabed and hoping that they flower and seed new bull kelp. And that's a really high level, non-technical overview of the project.
Thank you. I think that does a good job of summarizing it all. Aside from the restoration aspect of the project, I wanted to know if there was also an educational part as well, particularly with the youth of the Tsleil-Waututh Nation, regarding the history and the importance of kelp within these ecosystems.
So Tsleil-Waututh have used Burrard Inlet since time out of mind. And so we used it for transportation, cultural activities, and food. And then up until 1792, we used it freely and every day. Unfortunately, after contact, that changed. And a lot of other industrial colonizing practices changed the way that we use the waterways. And so because of the pollution and devastation, some of our members don't access the waterways as they once did. or understand some of the resources that we used to harvest from the waterways. So a part of that is bringing community, specifically our school kids, out to these restoration areas and having them participate in these projects. Not specifically related to kelp, but we did have our students out there tying eelgrass to washers to sink them into the other projects that we've done. And so their hands-on approach, not only did they actually get to learn about the bull kelp and other kelps, traditional practices, traditional uses, and then also getting them out on the land with elders and other knowledge holders so that there's cultural exchange and education going on as well. So scientifically, but then also culturally, they're learning from all levels of not only our employees, but elders and community members.
Another thing that I found really fascinating about this project had to do with how this kelp restoration is sort of working against certain current forces, whether that be the ongoing effects of colonization or how that connects to climate change, which is ever present. And I also know that this is not the first attempt with this restoration project. There was a previous attempt in a past year that wasn't as successful. How did the nation sort of adapt and change the strategies around the restoration project in order for it to become more of a success?
Well, I think doing a little of the monitoring, assessing where we put it, where we selected sites, and then knowing what kind of ecosystem kelp needs to flourish in. So having multiple sites is in a way beneficial and helps the production of it. And then having, in a sense, more options, different scenarios where it has a chance to succeed, and then understanding where it's not succeeding so that we don't replant there or waste attempts there.
And is there a specific site in particular where you're seeing the most success?
I believe our, out of the sites that we picked, I think New Brighton's one of the more successful sites.
Another thing I found really interesting about this project had to do with the various ways that kelp restoration can help these ecosystems. I was wondering if that's something you've been seeing and if that's something you can speak to.
The whole point of help in restoring the waterways is to help the forage fish. The forage fish are a major player within the food web, and is the herring. So in the 1860s, herring was completely harvested, exasperated from Burrard Inlet due to dynamite fishing. And it wasn't really known that it was such a huge part of Tsleil-Waututh diet that because it wasn't available for the last 100 years plus. And in the last 4 to 5 years, we've had a major herring return within Burrard Inlet. And I think that also attributes to the return of killer whales within Burrard Inlet as well. So herring and killer whales, which we haven't seen in decades, have started to return to Burrard Inlet.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is that the kelp restoration is helping with the local herring populations, which is in turn benefiting the local killer whales as well as other sea life.
I believe so.
Do you hope that this project is able to inspire other communities to adopt similar restoration practices?
Well, we do in Tsleil-Waututh in general, we have a lot of initiatives going on. We have water quality, we have restoration. We're doing a number of things, and I think we always put it back to the people that use the area. Are you doing your part thinking about green energy doing things differently, waste. And depending on how specific we want to get, it even goes into the way that you wash your clothes and the types of material that you use, because microplastics are a real thing. And what people don't know is that it comes from your laundry. So understanding that a lot of things are really interconnected, and everybody has a little bit to participate in. And even when you go to a beach, understanding that it is an ecosystem and that walking in the tidal area could be effectively stomping on someone's home. When I refer to someone, I mean resources, wildlife, marine environment.
Mm-hmm. So just being more mindful of the role that we all play within this ecosystem and the ways that we can sort of equitably coexist.
Yes, exactly. We're all neighbors. We all sort of have to live together. So, yeah.
Once again, that was our conversation with Michelle George, Tsleil-Waututh Nation's cultural and technical specialist, who spoke with us about the success of the nation's bull kelp restoration project, including the observed benefits that it's provided for local sea life populations. This has been Danny Nesvedarani, your community journalist for CJSF 90.1 FM. This segment would not have been possible without the continued support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada's Local Journalism Initiative. You can also find this piece on frequencynews.ca.
I was about to say thank you, but that would be thanking myself. So that was my piece on the Tsleil-Waututh Nation's kelp restoration project, which has been quite the success. And they've been seeing returns of things like killer whales and herring populations. You know, it's exciting and heartwarming stuff. And coming up next in this hour, we're going to be switching it up with some music. So coming up next, we have another bit of local VanCon. This comes from La Lune. That's right, La Lune. Yeah, they're probably going to be number one again. And this track is called Falling 2. I hope you all enjoy.